The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on Stitcher, iTunes, and NFL.com/Shack.
S-H-E-K, Shack, Shack, Shack.
Well, it has been a long season, and this is our last podcast from Studio 66. Maximum strength! Because, of course, soon after we wrap this up, we will jump on an airplane or maybe into an automobile. I don't know how everybody's making way from Los Angeles, California, over to Phoenix, Arizona, / Glendale, Arizona, for Super Bowl 49. But we will be over there all next week. I encourage you, Nate Demand, that you check in on NFL.com because NFL Live will be happening Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The three-hour show from Media Row, me, Matt Money Smith, Adam Rank, Molly Kerr, I'm all there, and Kibitzin with the hoi polloi of Super Bowl week there. And in the meantime, we'll be talking in a matter of minutes here with Calais Campbell of the Arizona Cardinals. Actually, I know in advance that he's going to be on Media Row. So we'll talk to him next week. But in advance of that, let's kibitz with him, one of the key members of one of the better defenses in the NFL. I don't know. Maybe we'll have time, fellas, to kibitz about the best defenses in Super Bowl history, in the Super Bowl era, because, of course, Michael Bennett of the Seahawks said a couple weeks ago that his was the best defense in Super Bowl history. I get it. It gets a little hyperbolic there. He's swept up in the excitement right now, but I don't think he's probably right about that. But anyway, we'll kibitz about that. In the meantime, you may have heard there are a couple of big storylines going on with regards to these two teams playing in the Super Bowl. Let's get into it here and now. We'll first say hello to our pal from NFL.com. You see his power rankings. He'll soon be issuing his official pick. Ooh, speaking of pick, the football baby made his football pick. But you're not going to see it until next Friday on NFL Live. So keep an eye.
A genius.
Thank you, AJ Hawk. And
not for you. That was a football baby.
And condolences. Yeah, well, condolences to Hawk and the Packers fans. I don't care. Give me all the heat and guff you want.
Are you still sad about this?
No, I'm kind of moving on.
Good check report this week, by the way. A lot of good observations and a lot of excuses for the Packers.
All right. Well, listen, I excuses. Can I tell you one thing about that?
Let
me say hello to everybody else. First of all the way from London, England, he is the Miami Dolphins fan here on the Dave Dameshek Football Program. It's Handsome Hank. Oh, we didn't say wait, say hello, Elliot. Here's Elliot Harrison. Yes, I'm sorry.
I just saw your look.
I forgot.
Hey, how's it going? What's up, Hank?
Hi, Elliot.
Let's play his music. We went a whole season without getting Elliot any music. Let's play Handsome Hank's music first.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome.
Hi, Dave.
Hello,
can I say hello
please,
to Elliot?
Now say hello to Elliot.
Hi, Elliot. Have you tried FanDuel?
FanDuel?
Yeah.
What is it? Tell me about it.
You know, it's weekly.
Wait,
fantasy.
It's finished. Oh, we don't need to do
sorry.
This, but we did
cut
it better
it out,
than anyone.
Elliot. Yeah. All right, and lastly, let's say hello to the NFL media's statistician here, the one who brings all the stats with a bad statitude. It's Drew Statton.
That was a real shot across the brow. I thought me and you had the best FanDuel read.
Wait
Hank?
A second. Well, shot across the brow.
Bow.
What is that?
Brow.
Bow. Yeah. Yeah. Bow. We're not talking about Joe Flacco or Anthony Davis here. We're talking or Adam Carolla. We're not talking about unibrows.
Did
those are the three
Luke
most
Frigno?
Prominent unibrows
Frigno
I can think of.
Have one?
I don't know about that. I don't know. Anywho, let's talk about the big issues. You guys, you Drew Statton, you Handsome Hank, were just over in Arizona, got a little sneak peek before our collective visit there next week for the Pro Bowl. Was it fun? I mean, for the Pro Bowl draft thing. Was it fun?
That's what we were there for. It was a terrific time. It's nice to get a little taste of the Super Bowl city and then be able to dip out again and then know that you're going back again later in the week.
Isn't it? Did you see, like, Clay Matthews and those guys?
Is there everyone?
And they seem cheery. That's what I always say. I don't like when there's any indication that the players move on with their lives, because the fans surely up in Wisconsin have not moved on one inch.
No, he was still crying.
Oh, he was. Good. No. I saw some smiles on his crying. Face.
Did you have a handkerchief for him? Is that how, did I pronounce that right?
A handkerchief. Good
Hank.
One.
I wasn't trying to make a pun.
I see. Okay.
No, I would never stoop to Elliott's level.
I don't want to talk about the Packers. We will move on to talking Seahawks and Patriots in just a second. But one thing you reminded me of there, Black Tie Behind the Glass, is this. You know, I've been hit up because I guess I am one of the advocates for Aaron Rodgers, or apologist, however you like it. Doesn't it matter, aside from the fact that he had a bad calf? He was playing in what we already know is the toughest road environment, and he was playing against what is clearly the best defense. Does that not matter for anything?
It didn't matter for some of the other players that are known as the greatest of all time, or have been known as the greatest of all time.
I mean, people are citing his numbers. Well, yeah, of course they're going to be a little depressed. He was playing the best defense in the league on their home field.
They're citing his numbers and the fact his team didn't win. Well, so not exactly a stellar performance.
One thing
greatest
for sure,
he
would be number 11 or 14 on the list of reasons why the Packers didn't win that game. But either way, I don't want to get into all.
I wouldn't go that far. 11 or 14. I mean, that's pretty far down the list. I mean, maybe five. But
all right,
or three or four.
Bostic's
fumble. No. Let's not please.
Morgan Burnett sliding down. Ha ha. Clinton Dix not knocking down the 2-point conversion. Andrew Corliss's drop on third
Dix
down.
Dropping an interception.
Yeah, haha, Clinton Dix dropping one. Not going for it on fourth and goal to start the game. Not going for it on fourth and goal the second time they were down there. That's seven right there.
Yeah, those are seven.
The coin flip in overtime, because I legitimately believe if they win that coin flip, the Packers, they at least scratch out three.
Well, you and I just have a different philosophy. That's really all it is. I don't believe in in-game scenarios as being the all-important. I think what happens early in the game often determines what happens late in the game. You can't look at something in a vacuum. I mean, Rodgers' miscommunication with Randall Cobb and that interception to Byron Maxwell was huge early in the game. Testing Richard Sherman when he was never open.
That was another one. That's nine. Jordy Nelson's drop of a touchdown pass, 10. Now I've just gotten us into double digits. I think I've just made my point.
All I'm saying is Packers could have been up in that game about 34-0 instead of 16-0 if it weren't for some really costly mistakes early on that would have rendered the things that happened later in the game, like the onside kick thing. Which, by the way, the onside kick thing was not nearly as important as people are making it out to be. Seattle didn't even have –
pretty important. They didn't catches that ball,
yeah,
it's over.
But they didn't even have to kick onside there. They could have kicked it deep. They didn't have to kick it onside. It wasn't like this was it. If Green Bay catches that ball, it's not over.
All right, Handsome's getting upset.
I'm not getting upset at all. I think it's a fascinating conversation, and I'd encourage anyone listening, and Elliot Harrison, obviously, to go listen to Monday's Dave Damashek football program.
We're covering a lot of the
iTunes
same soil.
iTunes and at
you're
Stitcher.
Right.
And at NFL.com/Sheck.
Black Tie's been... Black Tie's busy surfing the web.
Yeah, you
got him with his pants
tough
down.
Tough to
there.
Get
literally,
Facebook.
Literally and figuratively with his pants down. All right, so let's talk about it. It's what everybody in the world, I mean, they're talking about it on The View. They're talking about it on Fox News. They're talking about it on CNN. It
probably
really,
BBC as well.
It seems absolutely absurd to me that this is such a big story when everyone who plays the position – well, I have two thoughts. First of all, everybody who has played the position – seems to be in agreement, and so I'll defer to those guys, that all quarterbacks like to have the ball in a certain condition. Some guys like it more inflated, some guys like it more deflated. So I don't feel like it's a massive thing, and I do reject anyone who says, well, it didn't affect the outcome of the game, they whipped them. That's not the point, of course. Everybody gets that. Grow up if you're just citing the score. Obviously, if it is, in fact, egregious, if it's cheating, then the question is, how egregious a cheat is it? It doesn't make a difference if the team won 100-0 or not. The other thing, though, is why, the other side of my brain tells me this. Why, say it's deja vu with the Spygate thing. when Belichick said way back when that happened, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't really create any competitive edge. Then why are they doing it? Then why? Same thing with this. If this is irrelevant, if this has no impact on anything, then why is it happening? Then why did Tom Brady do it? If it doesn't really make any difference. EH, handsome, how say you?
Well, you know, for me, I kind of got bombarded. I did a few radio interviews the other day, or I guess yesterday, and they didn't tell me they were going to talk about this. And immediately they're asking me, and it's tough. You know,
what did you think they were going to ask you about?
Well, I mean, you know, we work for the league, and they're immediately attacking Roger Goodell, which I think that's the first thing I want to get out of the way. Roger Goodell has absolutely zero to do with this issue. Zero. He was not on the sideline with Steve Grogan squeezing the air out of football. So let's get the Ray Rice
Wait,
thing.
Wait, Steve Grogan was on the sideline.
But he was, yeah.
They don't let Steve Fine. Grogan on the sidelines, do they? Anymore?
Tony Eason.
But Scott Zolak.
I love him.
It.
But going beyond that, I agree that that's the way quarterbacks like the football. I mean, I hate to pull on all Allen Iverson here, but we're talking about deflated footballs, man. I mean, seriously, deflated footballs. Who cares? I mean, I get it. They went outside the rules. But if Spygate never happened, I don't think this is an issue, i.e., if the Bengals played the Colts in the championship game and it came out that the Bengals had some deflated balls, I just don't think that this would be as big a story. But because it's Belichick,
right,
because Don Shula a month ago was quoted calling him Belichick, because of Spygate,
Impressive.
Now it's an issue.
Yeah, but if you're on trial, your past deeds
are
relevant.
I'm just,
you don't reject those.
Just
pattern of behavior.
Right, so I guess what I'm trying to say here, and I'm not doing a great job of it, is that I really think this is more a question about Belichick's legacy than it is about anything else because of these previous events. If it was just about the rules being broken, then the same amount of attention would have to be given to Brian Hoyer and the Browns doing it in a playoff game, and I just don't think that's what would happen.
I feel like – I'll tell you this. I feel like I've been obviously pretty cynical about the Patriots and, you know, being a bit of a homer watching the Patriots beat the Steelers in Heinz Field a couple of times. In title games, I might make snarky remarks. In this case, you know, I don't know how to deflated balls. Every quarterback seems to think, every prominent QB seems to be weighing in, saying like, oh yeah, everybody does it, no big deal. However, I did hear on the radio today, and it made me laugh. Cynically, was somebody said, well, the Patriot way is like, well, the Patriot way is now just, I mean, it's ridiculous. There isn't, you can't say that with a straight face. The Patriot way is about winning, and people are just jealous. You know, that's the other angle you're hearing a lot of, is like, people are just jealous of Patriots. No, I don't think that's what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think if you had a good producer, he'd have booked Willie or Heath to come and talk to you about this. I think that's pretty obvious.
Well, yes. We booked Willie and Heath a couple weeks ago to talk about Pats, for good Pats.
But that was before we knew about
the doctoring
ball.
And we asked Heath about the Spygate.
That was really a shot across your brow.
nice.
But,
it's catching on.
But what I do want to say is, like, we know that every quarterback does something and doctors the balls before the game and has instructions for how they do it. And yesterday, I was talking to someone at the Pro Bowl draft who is from the NFL sort of research and development unit. I don't know necessarily what they call it. They're looking, eventually they'd like to put a chip in a football for many reasons. You can do all kinds of cool things into graphic visualization,
goal line plays,
goal line, all kinds of things. But they have spoken to Wilson and recently, and Wilson said that all the ball doctoring that goes on is unnecessary. It doesn't actually improve the ball in any meaningful way. So a quarterback might say, I like you to brush it and submerge it in water for 5 minutes, then take it out and blah, 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 and polish it. Apparently there's a place in New Mexico where you can order some specific type of clay or mud to rub on balls that quarterbacks are now like, yeah, we need this stuff on it. It doesn't make the – Wilson would say this because obviously they produce this product, but it doesn't make the blindest bit of difference what you do. This balls are still kind of essentially the
it's
same.
Anecdotal, but it's, Joe Theismann apparently said deflate it to what it was versus what's standard, and just, you know, by the field test, I can't tell which is
right.
What Theismann supposedly
right
said about that,
but it
which
does
kind of
exactly. But it but I guess the amount that it was deflated does seem like kind of more than, like, it's fine to brush the balls,
we'll make it
and
easier
do
to grip
all the things, of course, but it does seem like kind of a lot to take out of there when I don't know how many pounds of air in there, and I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but It seems like it was
your English accent, though, would allow people to believe
you are. I could play one in a movie.
You shouldn't acknowledge that publicly. You should allow we Americans to think that perhaps
Black Tie,
he
can
isn't.
You go back and just take that bit of... I am a scientist. In fact, I studied
Oxford.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I am a scientist, and I actually studied the pressure of balls at Oxford University for 5 years. Got a doctorate in it. That was dirty. And I can tell you that would have
crass
made a significant
American
difference.
Humor.
I didn't even get it.
Well, if you think about the game situation, it was a rainy day, obviously. I mean, I know Troy Aikman always had trouble throwing a wet ball. He always did. He never played well with a wet ball. You deflate the ball, it becomes easier to grip, which offsets the problem you have gripping it. The first thing I thought of, do you remember the 86 NLCS when the Mets in the dugout were throwing around Mike Scott's baseball? That's the first thing I thought of, him scuffing the ball. What if it came out that the 90s Braves pitchers all scuffed the ball? No, I'm just saying, what if that came out? Because that's, to me, is most synonymous. They're just like the Patriots. They keep winning every year. They don't win at all. The Patriots haven't won at all in 10 years. And if it came out that Bobby Cox had his, or was it Mazzoni? Was it Leo Mazzoni? I can't remember their pitching coach.
Yep.
That he had them scuffing the baseballs, would there be this kind of outrage? That, to me, would be the most synonymous with what happened.
Well, sure.
With
yeah.
You think there would? That's what I'm asking. Because I feel like it's
more
all about
probably, because that's a more, I think that's not as murky a thing. We know that if you scuff a baseball, it creates unnatural movement.
Right,
whereas
but a lot
we are not clear as we while everybody, like I say, I was almost said Star Jones, but I don't think she's been on the View for a decade now. But whoever's on that program currently, you know, on down or up, having this discussion, the practical thing none of us really know is, you know, matter of fact, we should do that, Black Tie. We should go and deflate a ball and just see if it how much easier it is to spin. You know,
easier. I couldn't answer that. It's so much easier when you can.
I mean, we know scuff baseballs is a wild advantage for Mike Scott and any pitcher.
But some
who
pitchers
does
said that when they scuffed the baseball, their strikes became balls. I mean, like
they lost control.
Right. Like, so it only worked for some pitchers, and I guess that's the point I was making: is just because they deflated the ball doesn't mean it made it easier for Tom Brady specifically.
Well, let me tell you this, and Drew Statton, you're a Raiders fan, and you know what what makes me feel like is, you know, in an era where you see Haloti Ngata get shelved for, you know, HGH, and that seems, you know, just again from looking from afar, there's something sinister about drugging. You know, I get that all there. You could also make probably a pretty compelling case in the 21st century for high-end HGH, but I'm not going to advocate for that. But anyway, there's something about this that I find very quaint and charming. I really do. This feels like Al Davis's Raiders kind of gamesmanship. You know, doesn't it seem WWF style kind of stuff? Like he brought Cowboy Bob Orton brought that foreign object into the squared circle to take down Hulk Hogan. You know, that kind of thing. It feels like Al Davis accusing the Pittsburgh Steelers of icing down the sideline, outside the hash marks to slow down Cliff Branch and stuff like that. Oh, the Boston Celtics, they love the dead spots on the parquet floor and everything.
Or, you know,
this is old school. So he messed with the footballs a little.
The Steelers knew what they were doing in the 75 championship.
I don't. But
that's what you're referring to.
That's right.
Yeah, they did it.
How do you know? What do you know?
Come on, man.
I'm not going to apologize for anything that happened back then.
Yeah.
You know, but anyhow, I'm conflicted because I feel like it doesn't seem like a big deal. And yet I do think it creates this weird Super Bowl now where there is this, you know, the Seahawks are Richard Sherman. I mean, it just gets a big yawn out of me that, well, Tom Brady isn't the guy who everybody thinks he is because he was saying mean stuff to us on the field in 2012.
I saw your tweet about that.
That's why I talked back like, hey, Richard Sherman, guess what? Tom Brady, you were a nobody in 2012. You guys hadn't done anything.
A, and B, you've been doing exactly what you're telling him, saying that he's been doing.
Yeah, right.
That's your thing. That's what everyone knows you as. Trash talking.
Right. In his defense, though, I guess what he's saying is that, yes, yes, everyone does know him as that, as opposed to Tom Brady, who people sometimes think he's this All-American.
Well, first of all, again, you know what that is? What that's exactly like is the way the Seahawks perceive themselves to be looked at by the world. Is this disrespect? Nobody likes us. Nobody believes in us. It's only the guys in this locker room. And I know for the last quarter century, no team has won a championship without claiming that silly little bit of rhetoric that no one outside this locker room believed in us. Hey, Seahawks, you were the number one seed. You're the defending champs. There are some people who believed in you. You know, this is such nonsense that nobody believed. Well, Dave, I hear from the 12s. Dave, you said they weren't going to make the playoffs. Yeah, it doesn't mean I think that they were some crummy team who couldn't beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I was doing it in a pecking order. I didn't know that Arizona was going to lose not one but two quarterbacks, and I thought the Niners with Navarro Bowman and some other returning pieces would knock them off once or twice, and then I would have been right that the Seahawks might not have made the playoffs. The point isn't that I have no respect for them and all that kind of stuff. At some point, you lose that argument when you have great deeds like winning a Super Bowl and getting the number one seed. So I really do. And by the way, this reminds me. I need to, you know, I go to Media Day next Tuesday.
I do know that, yeah.
And I like asking questions of the play, you know, because it's on one side. Here's the thing with Media Day. You have these people who show up dressed as superheroes and clowns and whatever else, and they're looking for their 15 minutes of fame, Gallagher style. They just make a clown of themselves to get a little bit of heat for a couple of minutes. Then on the other side of things, they're the curmudgeonly old reporters who resent having to be there and having to deal with all those kind of people who aren't serious-minded journalists. It's, you know, it's they're too serious, and then the other people are too ridiculous. I want to find the sweet spot in the middle. Last year, I asked all the players and coaches on both sides if this was a must-win game, and it was a lot of fun asking them that. The year before that, I found Joe Flacco, and I apologized for not believing in him. If you have any thoughts, Czech Republic, please drop me a line with the hashtag DDFP, and let me know what could be a juicy question.
You're burying the lead here. This is where you and Peyton Manning got in a little heated exchange.
No.
That's why
it wasn't
Peyton
heated.
Refuses to talk to you, right?
No. I told Peyton last year. I'm sorry. You're right. I told Peyton last year because remember he said whoever wrote that narrative can stick it where the sun don't shine.
And whoever wrote that narrative can shove that one where the sun don't shine.
Thank you, Peyton. I told him I was the one who wrote that narrative, and I asked him if I could take it out now, and he said no, keep it there. He did. And
I remember.
So what should I do at Media Day this year? If you have any thoughts, drop me a line on Twitter at Damashek. So,
tell Russell Wilson you don't believe in his tears.
You know what? I'm not going to do that, but I am going to I am going to track Doug Baldwin down and let him know that I now believe in him. And just to see if that flips him out, you know, I don't know where do the Seahawks go if they no longer can play with that chip on their shoulder? Hey, guess what? The whole world believes in you. Now, where do you go?
And get all the other members of the media to say that they believe in him too.
But is this now? Do you feel? Yeah, like yeah. Hey, everybody, let's give Doug Baldwin a hand. Let him know how
Put
much we believe in him.
Put your hand up if you don't believe in Doug Baldwin.
All right. So now we're
everyone believes in you, Doug. What else have you got?
Is this the but now I feel like this Super Bowl has suddenly turned into, and I really do legitimately hope it'll change in the next few days here. Doesn't it feel like this is now nobody likes either one of these teams now that outside of the two cities that from which they hail that people are like, there's no winners in this Super Bowl now. It's either the cheating team or the mouthy team.
Well, I don't feel that way myself because I like it. I don't know. I know people love the fact that the NFL is so competitive now, but sometimes it wears me out. I mean, I don't like parody. I really don't because sometimes it's another word for mediocrity, and you don't have any good – does anyone think that when the 2012 Ravens won the Super Bowl, they were the best team in the league? Or when the 2011 Giants won the Super Bowl, they were the best team in the league? I like this Super Bowl matchup because I think you can make a legitimate case that these are the best teams that their conference have to offer, and I think that's good for
here,
football.
Here, smelly it, Elliot Harrison. I'm with you 100% on that. I like upsets. Upsets are great. The Jets beating the Colts in Super Bowl III has shaped pro football. But when you get upsets – all the time, nothing is an upset. It's just coin flipping. We may as well just flip coins and save ourselves a lot of time.
Tip babies over. May as well just tip babies over.
I like an upset, but nothing is an upset when they just when you know every game every week. Can you believe that team beat that team?
Yes.
Yeah, I can because it happens every. It happened last week. You know?
I agree with you.
I wanted to, you know, circle back because we kind of left the deflated thing kind of open-ended. Do you guys care? In other words, do you think this affects Bill Belichick's legacy? Because I wonder about that. I remember when Jim Haslett came out a few years ago and he said that the Steelers offensive line taking steroids in the 70s is what got steroids into vogue. I don't know if you guys remember that story. It kind of got brushed away, and nobody thinks of the 70s Steelers offensive line as a bunch of steroid heads, partially because it was legal back then.
And also partially because I think people who know that also know that, you know, most of the NFL was...
Right,
was
exactly. So do you think this is the kind of thing, and Spygate, that 5 years from now when Belichick is retired, that will fade into oblivion, as Mike Tyson said?
I think that Spygate's very different. Spygate is cheating. Mm-hmm. Spygate is cheating. They're doctoring balls, which all 32 quarterbacks are trying to do and have their own mm-hmm. way of doing. It's just a thing, and it just happens. And I think Dave summarized this pretty nicely at the top of this show that it happens, but because it was the Patriots, it's been made into a big deal, partly because it's the AFC Championship game and people need something to talk about during the week between the Championship game and the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And we've had that every year. It was 2 years ago, it was Ray Lewis and deer antler spray. I mean, there was always something like this week that comes up. But it's because it's the Patriots. If it was the Bengals, I think one of you guys made that mm-hmm. point earlier, if it was the Bengals, then we probably wouldn't be talking about it.
But to answer your question, yeah, mm-hmm. though, Smelly, I do think that this affects Bill Belichick's thing. I mean, I don't think this one will,
and I think
probably...
Well,
who are we talking about? The general public? Like I say, listen, I'm
but
looking
in,
at...
But in an hour from now, and we're recording on Thursday afternoon at around noon Pacific, Tom Brady's probably going to come out and say, you know what? This is what I do. This is what I've been doing forever. Bill doesn't know anything about it.
I hope it does quell all that nonsense. Because it does occur. But the another little caveat, the thing that gives me a little bit of pause before I say this is completely this is a non-story and I don't know why it's getting such heat, is that Troy Aikman says, well, this is more severe than what did he even compare it to? I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of what the severity of it is worse than. Not Spygate, but he thinks that the league should hammer the Patriots on this one. That they should
and they
really.
They probably will.
But Aikman also said, "Yeah, you know, I like Elliot said, yeah, I bet you they will. They will, and that's going to be."
Yeah, but they're not going to suspend anybody.
But if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, if the Patriots win next week, and then on the other side of that, the league drops the hammer on them, it looks bad. It's a bad look. Optics. That's the new.
So what do you do?
Do you
suspend Bill Belichick for the Super Bowl?
No, I wouldn't
Jimmy
do anything
Garoppolo
like that.
Versus Russell Wilson,
or do you have Josh? Well, I think Belichick would be the guy that.
I don't know that he would. I mean, the one thing that you know the commissioner himself has been very serious about, and it kind of you know didn't look so good. In that's why we've been talking about the Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson deal through the fall is that he said ignorance is no excuse, and I think he said that about the Saints. And Bill Belichick in his press conference this morning said, I don't know anything about how footballs get from here to here. I've never talked to anyone about it. I've never even thought about it in my coaching career. I don't necessarily buy that that's the case. I think what's happening is the blame or the opportunity to own up is being shifted over into Brady's court.
I agree.
I've been noticeably quiet because I don't think I could care less about anything than I do about this whole deflated balls thing. And no one dislikes the Patriots more than me after the Tuck rule just made me cry childhood tears into my pillow as a like 13-year-old. That's how young I am, guys. Who cares? I mean, we all know everyone does it. Eventually, people are going to come out. And I think five years from now, as far as Belichick's legacy, 5 years from now won't be an issue because everyone's doing it. The Spygate thing is the biggest thing, the biggest knock on him.
Right.
He's gonna get in the Hall of Fame. It's not gonna have any impact.
I agree.
He's still gonna be considered the greatest coach of all time.
Here's the problem.
I don't know about
here's
I don't
the here's the
there.
Problem. General opinion.
It knocks him out of the conversation.
It does. Lombardi's name's on the trophy, dude. I don't think there's any top.
Do you believe for a second, Lombardi, so driven to win, Shula, so driven to win, Chuck Knoll, so driven to win, in a day before mass media existed, before Twitter and before 24-hour sports TV channel, do you believe that they weren't, they were like, we cut no corners and we take, of course, everyone, I mean, like, you know, they, like the saying is, and I'm going to butcher it now, but if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Oh, dude.
It's you know, that, there are, the whole way through, if suddenly you drop Vince Lombardi into this era and he did the practices that he was, not practices for games, but the practices mm-hmm. he had for his football team, would be, you can't do that, but he got away with it.
Dude, Lombardi was, it's appropriate that you mention that, because the Ice Bowl, which we just celebrated, you know, because of mm-hmm. Packers-Cowboys, Lombardi was very proud of this electric grid he had underneath the field at Lambeau.
Switch it on.
And apparently it didn't work the morning of the Ice Bowl. The Cowboys had practiced at Lambeau the day before. The Cowboys had a total speed advantage in that game and had better talented, more talent roster.
Don
Shula, all of a sudden it didn't work.
1982 AFC Championship
exactly,
game. We forgot to put the tarp on the field. It rained last night. Good luck making that offense work.
That's right, and the Jets were a speed offense. Freeman McNeil, Wesley Walker.
I mean,
totally
and Don Shula got to. Well, it is interesting that some of the biggest incidents all revert back to the same handful of teams.
Yep.
The Patriots have this snowplow game against Don Shula's Dolphins. What was that, 81?
Mm-hmm. No,
82.
85.
Snowplow?
It's 82. Yeah.
I think it's earlier, in the 80s than 85. Yeah, but you know, specifically, and mm-hmm. Al Davis's Raiders are the other one so really the Patriots and Raiders are the two neck and neck who have had the most sort of gamesmanship scandals. And I guess you could throw the Steelers in there because of the, like you say, the steroid stuff in the 70s. But what I've always said, when Patriots fans throw that one out, how dare you cite Spygate as a potential competitive advantage for the Patriots when the team that you rooted for in the 70s is known to have been juicing back then.
Wasn't against the rules.
Well, here's the other key difference. Everybody was doing it. Doesn't make it right, but everybody was doing it in the 70s. It wasn't a competitive advantage. It was keeping up with the Joneses in the 70s. The Spygate scandal, we've heard tons about. This is my go-to every time. And, you know, a decade later, however long it's been, 7 years later, whatever. Everybody at the time said, oh, stop it. The Spygate, everybody does it. How has there not been one shred of evidence that anyone has ever done it? Why have we never seen any visual proof that the Buccaneers were also playing around with this? We've heard that a lot of teams did it, but we've never seen any proof that that is the case. That's the key difference with Spygate. This one, like I say, Matt Hasselbeck, who is on the Colts, said, we don't think it had anything to do with the result in this mm-hmm. game.
I encourage Jack Del Rio to actually look into this and maybe start, because it would help the Raiders a lot. I would love a 6-1 season next year.
That was my knock.
Tape
team. In the really lean years for the Pittsburgh Pirates when everybody else was getting busted for steroids, that was my question. Where's the will to win, Pirates? Why is no one getting caught with the juice?
Yeah.
You know, you guys stink. Maybe that has something to do with it.
You know, I think you make a really good point, though, on Spygate, and I just going a step further with that. If it was such not a big deal, then why did they go to such great efforts to hide it? If everybody...
Well, that's the question with this thing, too, is we'll see what Tom Brady has to say, and of course, by the time you hear this, he'll have spoken, and I think he'll just try to diminish the import of how much air the ball had in it. But like I say, whether you agree with it or not, look on right now on Twitter, Deflategate is still, I mean, and has been for 36 hours now, the top thing, mm-hmm. even ahead of Jeff Gordon, who if you haven't heard, he's calling it quits from NASCAR.
Who's Jeff Gordon?
Yeah, he's a race car driver.
Oh, cool.
I don't really know much about him.
Belichick's
tweeting.
Oh, no,
Brady's tweeting. All these things. And public opinion. Listen, I don't think Mariah Carey is better than Pavement, but you know what? The American public buys more Mariah Carey records than they do Pavement records. That doesn't...
How's that? Well,
Because if everybody thinks this, if everybody's decided that this is important and everybody is against the Patriots, then of course it's going to affect his legacy. It's going to affect the way he's regarded in NFL history. Because insiders can debunk it by saying, well, I did the same thing. It's not a big deal. Doesn't seem to matter. They're talking about it on The View, for goodness sakes. They don't. What do they know about it? But they're talking about it and tisking about it, I'm sure.
I'm quite confident.
Right? I mean, that's
the
point.
No, sorry. You confused the hell out of me with your
analogy. It doesn't make it
pavement,
right.
Like pavement
my analogy.
From what I gather, is a band.
No, I know. Oh, okay. I know Pavement. You could have continued with that. Without that bit, I'd be with you. But I'm still lost in the Mariah Carey
because
thing.
Mariah Carey, I don't buy her records, but it doesn't mean that there aren't more people out there that have an opinion that disagrees with mine. If everybody thinks it's these people, and listen, you can never go ahead. Go ahead, Staten.
No, just can anyone in this room throw a spiral?
Of course yes. I can. I
no
throw
way.
It on a rope.
You say that so confidently. I am quite confident no matter how much air we put in a ball, Staten could not throw a spiral.
So well, speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself.
What
do you mean? Yeah.
I got a hose.
I think we need some a DDF.
We talked about it.
Too many letters.
You ready to really have your jaw drop? You know who would win that? Handsome Hank. He can spin it.
Yeah,
and he's a Southpaw.
Let's do it.
I'm from the banks.
We got a whole
off season.
Boy, I just got a. I mean, I threw a perfect spiral through a wreath from 20 yards out with money pressuring me in front of your face on Fantasy Live. You just threw me under the bus.
I don't listen.
You don't
do whatever
that?
You do whatever you want to. That's
well,
fine.
Let's
but guess
it.
What?
I remember that.
I remember it. Do you know what I also remember? Where I'm from, Pittsburgh, PA, the banks of the Three Rivers, home to Dan Marino, Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, Joe Namath. I'm born with the gift. It's not an option. It's a birthright. I can spin it. You'll see it.
Who's
see me?
Who's weighing these things?
I don't.
You
listen.
Can
do whatever
you
want. You
can prepare
do
my balls for me.
Yeah, I really hope the black tie got that.
All right, real quick.
Is this a good time to mention I didn't shower last Friday?
What else is new? All right,
water
listen.
For California.
See pattern of behavior. That's why you're smelly at Elliot Harrison.
You betcha. I love it.
If this were a one-off situation, we wouldn't bat an eye at it. But now that we know that you regularly smell badly, it's a now we've come to expect it. Real quick, let's talk about it here because Michael Bennett, I will do this in the offseason. Black Tie wants us to wait. Oh, speaking of things that Black Tie and I were talking about, and Smelly at Elliot and I did a couple days ago, we did, if you've watched the NFL's Infinite DVR that we do where we look back at old games, the original broadcast, we gave out some awards. The Lombardi Trophy goes out on Super Sunday. Before that, the Vincies will be presented, best catch, best defensive play, a couple other things, best
fun.
Game, some other stuff.
Can't wait to see that.
Be on the lookout for those. Those are fun little award show type of things. But speaking of honoring, we in the offseason will do a proper ranking of the best defenses. I guess it makes sense to see how the Seahawks defense performs against this Patriots offense and their deflated or inflated balls before we give a final thing. But I did promise we would do it. So real quick, do you think – I'll start with you, Smelliot. Do you feel that the Seahawks are the best – listen, like I already told you my opinion. I think it's the Seahawks are a very good defense, but, I mean, come on. Don't get over your skis there, Michael Bennett.
No, I don't think it's even close. There's no way they're the
best. Give me your top three.
I would definitely take the mid-80s Bears, 84, 85, 86 Bears. I would take
number one.
I would take them number one. I would. Based on if you look at the top, the top eight defenses of all time in points per game allowed in the Super Bowl era, so it's 1966 going forward. They're all 1977 and before. And the reason why is because in 78, that's when they had the five-yard bump rule. That's when they started letting tackles extend their arms. The Vikings are in there multiple times. They're in there three times. They have three of the top seven defenses of all time. So I would take the Vikings second. The Bears, I took the most because they have the two highest-ranking defenses after that rules change comparatively. The highest of all time since the rules changes, if we're just doing a one-off season, are the 2000 Ravens at 2.3 points or 10.3 points per game. They're ninth all time but the previous or the eight guys in front of them are all from before that rule right. change, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So 1 year, 2,000 Ravens. If we're talking about three seasons, which is what people are talking about with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I don't like doing the single season. I like to look at it as an era.
Three seasons. It's hard to argue with the Purple People Eaters. I mean, literally, they have three of the top 7 points per game allowed in the Super Bowl era. And then the mid-'80s Bears, 84, they set a record for sacks. 85, they led the league in points allowed. They win the Super Bowl. What, did they shut out the Giants? They shut out the Rams in the playoffs, and then they won 46-10, right, Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And then 86, they set the points allowed record for 16 games that was broken.
They would have won the Super Bowl if Jim McMahon hadn't gotten spiked by Charles Martin on his shoulder.
Right, which, to circle back, if you want to talk about the most egregious breaking of the NFL rules that I've ever seen in my life, it's Charles Martin.
You and I have talked about this in the past, and that is absolutely – that happened in the 21st century, given social media and everything
suspended
else.
Suspended for a year.
10 seconds – he might have been kicked out of the game of football forever.
Indefinitely.
He picks him up. If you've never seen
picks
it, Google
him up and
it,
carries
kids.
Him.
Go on the YouTube, kids, and Google Charles Martin. It'll be the first thing that comes up. Jim McMahon throws the ball and is standing watching. 2 count, 3 count, 4 count. Charles Martin comes up next to him, picks him up, and spikes him on his right shoulder. Jim McMahon was never the same after that. The Bears were never the same after that.
That's right. So I got
and really changes the trajectory of that team and NFL history.
I agree. If you go 3-year windows, I'd say number one, mid-'80s Bears, number two, Purple People Eaters, tied maybe with the Steel Curtain mid-'70s Steelers, because the Purple People Eaters were not able to actually win it all. The 70s Steelers were. The Steelers just don't have the same stats that the Vikings do.
Sure they do. 76 Steelers have those stats.
Right, but I wanted to go a 3-year case. But I'm fine with swapping those and going Steel Curtain 2, Vikings 3.
74, 75, and then the year 76. The Steelers don't win the Super Bowl is 76, but they have that's their best individual single season effort, and then they go on to win two more
78,
Super Bowls.
Listen, I looked up 78 because I was curious. The 78 Steelers were in the top 20 all time. Their defense didn't start regressing until their last Super Bowl win, when really I think, I mean, you would know better than me on this one, but the offense really won that title, I
Super Bowl 14, they start to have some lesser pieces on the back end there. Yep. You have Ron Johnson playing cornerback.
And guys are getting older, you know? Right. I mean,
but yeah, I'll shout out.
What
real
are you
fast.
Laughing about, Drew
I think
Stafford?
The Eagles, I think Buddy Ryan's Eagles
yeah,
are slept on.
That's one that I saw with my own eyes. And they didn't win a Super Bowl, but that was, people were scared of playing that team.
Think about that. We've talked about that as well, and maybe that's some good offseason content, is to try and rank the best eras for a division ever.
The NFC
East late 80s, early 90s is probably the most rugged, most competitive that you've ever seen, because you had the mighty, like you say, you had that defense with that. But then you have Washington winning Super Bowls around there. You have the transition.
That defense was no joke either. No. Dexter Manley, mm-hmm. Wilbur Marshall, those
Charles
and you had the, and you had Charles the Mann. and you had the LT New York Giants, and that's another one that you have to rank. Probably, in fact, that 90 team specifically, pretty actually 86 through 90
Giants.
That New York Giants defense certainly has to rank.
Belichick is coordinator, but you know what's ironic about those Eagles teams with Buddy Ryan? They're actually the 1 year that they were freaking phenomenal. One of the best. If we're going single season, you could put the 91 Eagles up with anybody. That's the year Rich Kotite took over as head coach. And Buddy Ryan and Jeff Fisher left. So, I don't know. I think Jeff Fisher wasn't there.
I'll make the case for the Seahawks. It's going to be a tough one.
Okay.
So bear with me.
But you know what? To bridge the gap, here's what you have to do. And another one that
TD is getting
black tie settled down. There, people have 2 weeks to fill or a week and a half to fill before kickoff. That we can have a conversation for a couple minutes about this. This is historically relevant. The Seahawks defense is an all timer. Where does it rank all time? I'll tell you one more though.
I love you guys and the history, but sometimes you just want to live in the now, man.
All right. Well, I want to hear about your conversation. Speaking of the Seahawks and their defense, I want to hear about you appearing on a Seahawks podcast. But real quick, though, before we get into that black tie, The an all-time defense, given the individual pieces of it, the Kansas City Chiefs of the late 60s,
oh,
early
yeah.
70s. They have so many Hall of Famers on that unit. Of course, I didn't lay eyes on them, so it's hard for me to tout them too much.
That's a great call.
Also, the dog pound. You know, those 80s Browns had had some good defenses too. But, I, you know, listen, call me a homer, but I'm putting the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s.
You'd put them over the mid-80s Bears just because they were able to win more than one?
Well, the thing that I've said about that, about the 46 defense is they faced one QB who could pull the trigger quickly in Dan Marino, and Dan Marino defeated them. If they had played them again in the Super Bowl on the fast track of the Superdome, I think they would have done that again. I think the kryptonite to the 46 defense was a QB who could get rid of it quickly and burn you for an all-out blitz.
Maybe
certainly
so.
Handsome, you would agree.
Well,
with that.
It happened the one time that they played. So yeah,
yeah. Right.
Well, and I think in '88 though they opened the season and Bears crushed them. Just saying, I think there was more going that '85.
'88. That's 4 years difference.
What's well, the Duper and Clayton were still in their prime. I mean, you still had a good offensive piece. That Dolphins game, I remember it well. They had the entire 72 team on the sidelines for that game. I think that was definitely also a case of the whole crowd being.
They might have shown up for the Super Bowl too, though. If that's what it matters, they might have turned out for that game as well. All right, Drew Staton, do it, because like Elliot says, a seminal change in football is the rules changes in 78. So everything prior to that, the point totals are going to be lower overall. Then you get into the 21st century where it's the so-called quarterback league and, you know, point totals are higher. So you can't begrudge the Seahawks some credit. Their point, I mean, what do they average, 15, 16 points against?
Well,
that's not going to stack up with those mid-70s teams. But, again, the rules are so wildly different. You can't hold them you can't fault them for that.
So throwing this out there first, that if you just look at two-season span here in the Super Bowl era, yardage allowed, the Seahawks are 97th. Over the last 2 years, and it's not like we're talking like, oh, these are all 70s teams. There's, you know, obviously the Ravens are in there, but even like the 07-08 Steelers in terms of yards.
Yeah, we got a couple errors.
Oh, I take the 2008. I would take the 2008 Steelers over this Seahawks team any day of the week. As far as defense, absolutely.
What about the mid-90s Pittsburgh Steelers?
No.
With Greg Lloyd and no.
Well, let's see if they're on
Kevin
Drew's list.
Green.
Well, Rod Woodson,
that wasn't a good team.
I love the players, but they didn't perform as well as LeBeau's unit.
Looking points, they're 73rd, and again, we're talking. Best defense of all time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
73rd doesn't sound like
73rd. The couple things they do have going for them, though, they're the third team in NFL history to lead the NFL in scoring defense in three straight seasons. They joined those the people leader Vikings.
That's what it's about is measuring yourself against your peer group. Your current.
I think the one thing that team, you know, all the teams that you guys have mentioned have that sort of fearsome pass rusher that people are like, oh, you got to watch out for that guy. The Seahawks don't really have. Richard Sherman. We make a big deal about their secondary, which is terrific.
Michael Bennett's
a good player, but he's not going to be a Hall of
Bennett,
Famer.
Bennett, Averill, and the rest. That's a great point because they get
about
heat.
Yeah.
But it's really the story.
It's
funny. Another team that gets slept on quite a bit is, and I would be raw about this actually. If I were a defensive player for the 80s 49ers, I'd be a little bit like, hey, how come we don't get a parade? Why is it always about Montana and these guys? You know, I know people hail Ronnie Lott, but that secondary specifically was really good. And look up the numbers. They're number one, number two, number three defense in some of those Super Bowl years, and yet nobody ever cites the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like the Dolphins, but they had a good defense as well. Obviously, the year they went undefeated, they almost shut out.
Yeah, I think that defense is pretty well hailed because the offense was kind of efficient but pedestrian.
Anyway, but you're right. It is a funny only the Niners of the 80s would I hold up among these great defenses that the lead item that was so good is the back end of
right.
it. It's always about you're right. It's usually about dominance against the run and getting after the QB. Go ahead, Staton. Wrap it up here. Bring it home.
One final note they have going for them is that if you're looking just in this era against their contemporaries, that you know they've allowed fewer than 9,000 passing yards in the last 3 years, They're the only
team. That's amazing.
They're the only team to even allow fewer than 10,000 passing yards.
Hmm. Wow. That's amazing.
So the gap, you know, it's certainly – I don't know that we've seen, you know, one defense dominate this much and in there, like, stand out to this extent, you know, especially with all of the rules that have been set up. We talked all offseason about how, oh, like, all these illegal contact, the Seahawks are done. Like, they're going after the Seahawks, and, you know, clearly it didn't – you know,
yeah, there's even, I mean, I bet you if you even looked at the numbers from 2011 going forward, the passing numbers are through the roof. Even that, in other words, that's its own era, just the last few years, because safeties can't leave their feet anymore to hit receivers, which means that seam route to Jimmy Graham is there all the mm-hmm. time, you know, and then the illegal contact, really, you can circle all the way back to when the Colts and Patriots played that AFC Championship in 03, and Bill Polian complained to the league after the game that the Patriots linebackers were putting their hands all over Marcus Pollard and those guys trying to leave the line. And so they re-emphasized illegal contact. And weren't penalties way up, by the way, this year?
The hands to the face is a scourge. They got to get rid of that one. It really makes
me crazy.
It's
not fair. I mean, if you're pushing on a guy and he ducks and you hit his head, I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know what? And to wrap it all up right here with a specific one-on-one matchup, it's to me, whoever wins this individual matchup maybe wins the Super Bowl is Cam Chancellor versus Rob Gronkowski. Because if Gronkowski is the unmanageable piece for every defense, save possibly the Seahawks, they might be able to say, I don't know if that's how it'll work, that they'll say, hey, Cam Chancellor, your assignment for the next 3.5 hours is stopping 87. But it could be that simple. He's a good physical match for Gronkowski at the very least.
Honestly, I think Cam would get beat. I think Chancellor, if that happens,
if he can't, who's there is no. I don't.
I think put a corner on him.
I said the Jenga theory. I said Rob Gronkowski is the most important Jenga piece, non-QB in the mm-hmm. NFL. Take him away, that offense implodes, and this is his greatest test. So that's interesting. If he can deliver a going against what I think we perceive to be the best or the most rugged safety in the NFL right now, then he'll have earned it.
No tight end has put up 100 yards against the Seahawks in the last 3 years.
Wow. Well, there's a good number right there. Yes, Black Tie, you talked on, what was it called, the Seahawkers?
The Seahawkers podcast, and for my money, I'll take Earl Thomas over Cam Chancellor.
Yes. Not that this says everything, but I thought that was pretty good stuff when Cam Newton shoved Earl Thomas to the ground. He shamed him pretty good there.
Well, yeah, he's not as physical and not as big as Cam, but especially in coverage, I would probably take Earl Thomas. But yeah, go back to your point. I was on a Seahawks podcast.
But first question is why? Why?
Did you promote the DDFP on there?
I did, of course.
Did you?
No. Well, did you really, or you just?
I legitimately did. Yeah, I spoke about, you know, Dave, Hank. I spoke about even Dan Hanses around NFL and all that.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say. I'm sure around Coach's
Show.
Came
appreciate
up.
That.
Coach's Show moved the sticks.
You mentioned them all.
I did. Yeah.
Well, if you mentioned all, then you didn't mention any.
Come on. But no, they wanted me on, I guess, first of all, to thank me for standing up, quote unquote, for the Seahawks listeners on the DDFP.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Just try to present both sides of the argument, as you like to say, playing devil's damage like sometimes. And then we also spoke about the origin of the sexy deep ball, which, it's actually ironic because the.
Play it for everybody who doesn't know it, Black Tie.
Play what? The origin?
The sexy deep ball.
Well, no, that's not the origin. That's the drop. But the origin of that play, actually, or that term, comes from the Seahawks versus Pats in 2012, Week 6, that game winner to Sidney Rice. I watched that. I'm like, man, that's one sexy deep ball. And then that's when this bad boy happened.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson, and I throw a sexy deep ball.
Because he actually points to that play as the best pass he threw during his rookie season. So it's a fun listen. It's a fun time.
Russell Wilson doesn't brag on himself too much. I do hail Black Tie for getting him to actually say that.
It was a tough one, but got it out of him.
He throws a Jeff Blake deep ball.
He
man.
Does. That's a good comparison. Yeah, throws that high, that Jay Schrader moon ball, that moon shot. That
probably because he's so short. Is that a?
Jeff Blake was short too. All right. Does everybody feel good about wrapping it up here?
I think we could carry on, but we could leave it as well. Can we make sure, like, Elliot and I have made a habit every Thursday through the NFL 2015 NFL or 14 NFL season of throwing red flags at each other or not in Elliot's case, Are we going to get the opportunity to throw red challenge flags for the Super Bowl?
I should like to.
I said it last week's episode. That was the last time, and I gave the stats for how many flags were thrown and percentages. They were
and
completely
then you
wrong.
Hey, this ain't the Seahawkers podcast. But still. We need to do a red challenge flag in Arizona.
No, it would just be weird for us not to throw red challenge flags on the Super Bowl.
Maybe we put it out to the people. Do they want that?
Would you like it?
Oh, that's a good question. Tweet Black Tie.
Black Tie.
At producer TD is a good way to let him know.
Hashtag it DDFP.
Let him know. If you don't think it's an important thing to hear Smelly at Elliott and Handsome Hank go head-to-head one last time in the biggest game of the season, then, you know.
Go ahead and promote what you will be doing next week in Arizona.
I already did. I know you were busy.
Well, do it again.
You were busy
Googling. Top and at the bottom.
Mavs Thunder.
Like I said. First of all, hashtag DDFP. I'll be at Media Day for the Sheck Report. We've had good times there in the last few years. You know, I forget about it. You know what was one of the coolest things I got to do? Was
Promote.
All right. At the Dallas Super Bowl. At the Dallas Super Bowl, I got up on the big screen. I got on the Jerry screen or whatever they call it.
I remember.
Vigipore.
Boy, you just found Elliot's sunglasses, Handsome Hank, and you look quite ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah,
ridiculous?
I don't know. Is that – I don't know if that's an indictment of you or the eyewear. That's a good –
It could be that I'm wearing a headset as well.
Yeah, no, pretty cool.
There's a guy in Dallas that does an awesome Jerry, and he calls that the Vidya board. The Vidya.
That's you.
No, there's this guy in First Station in Dallas that does. He's awesome.
All the listeners know exactly what you're talking about right now.
No, they don't. Well, you know what? So what? It's niche.
It's niche. All right, listen. We'll wrap it up, and now we will go to. We'll get these guys out of here, and right now let's go to our conversation. Very generous deed. I found out I did this, and then I just found out after the fact. You'll hear Calais Campbell and I kibitz about his big donation to University of Miami. I didn't know how big it was. $1.6
million.
$1.6
million
he gave.
Man.
That is not jive. Let's get to him right now. This is a man who we've talked to in the past. He lives by the cardinal rule here on the Dave Damaschek football program. No jive. Let's hear from him now about the Seahawks and beyond. Calais Campbell, everybody.
Dave Damaschek, yeah.
Oh, this is good. This is a guy who has seen the Seattle Seahawks twice a year now for the last few years. He's familiar, obviously. You know him, watching him on one of the very best defenses in the NFL. Here he is from the Arizona Cardinals, Calais Campbell. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm better now that I'm speaking with you. And how you doing? How's the offseason going for you?
I wish I was still playing, but the offseason's been nice. You know, just get back and relax, man. Getting ready to enjoy the Pro Bowl, so it's always fun.
Yeah, well, before we get to Pro Bowl and the season that was for Arizona and the Super Bowl that still shall be, what's the big announcement you made earlier this week?
You know, I was able to give a pretty good lump sum of money to the University of Miami to get a scholarship going on a yearly basis, an opportunity that allows one lucky kid to go to school there. It's kind of a cool thing because, I'm really important. I really believe a lot in education. And, a lot of athletes out there, they always believe that they're going to the NFL. And, I want them all to believe that. But I want them all to have a great backup plan in case it don't work out. Because I know how hard it is to come across one of these jobs. So, I'm trying to encourage everybody, by giving a scholarship to focus on, getting a good education and having a good fallback plan just in case the NFL is it. In their cards.
That seems like a good idea, and I'm glad to hear you say that. And I can say from personal experience, my NFL dreams went by the board some time ago. And I'm glad I got my degree. But but don't laugh at me, Calais Campbell. By the way, the team's name is the Hurricanes down there. I've long said it's enough. Hurricanes are a terrible thing. Shouldn't we change the way we name these things instead of it being, it's bad enough for it to then be Hurricane Gloria. Then it's a shame shouldn't we name them after NFL players? What about this? Hurricane DeBrickashaw. Now that is a scary-sounding hurricane. True?
that would be a pretty terrifying hurricane. Brickishaw Ferguson's a scary dude sometimes.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy, though.
Yeah, no, I've spoken with him. But, yeah, see, then it also takes your dignity when it's, you know, hey, what happened? My house got destroyed by Hurricane Patty. You know, it's extra. It's an unnecessary extra little dig at you. You know, you see what I'm saying there.
A little insult.
All right, but you know, by the way, like I say, I'm headed to Arizona. Real quick, do you have any food recommendations for me? Any secret little holes in the wall that I need to explore in my week in Arizona?
Oh man, you know there are so many good places, but you know, I can't think of anything off the top of my mind that you really need to try. But you know, man, I wish I really could think of a place. If I could think of it, I might have to get a horn. I'm going to have somebody get the information to you, but...
Yeah, if you tell me the holes in the wall, then they won't be secrets, and, you know, there'll be a bunch of riffraff in there, and we really want it to be the hoi polloi, like Calais Campbell and Dave Damashek and that, and just, you know... But what's the food I have to get? Is it Tex-Mex? What do I need to be on the lookout for in Phoenix?
Man, really, Miami has a little bit for everybody, you know, the
Tex-Mex
are awesome, and they got, amazing seafood, as you can imagine, you know, But, you know, there's this one little sandwich spot that, I mean, it's just top-notch right there on the beach. You know, I have to get you the information for.
All right. Well, listen, maybe we can catch up next week and we'll figure it out. Meantime, Calais Campbell, that makes me think, are you a big soup guy?
You know what? I eat everything. I'm a big salami, man.
That's true. You are big. So, but what's your favorite kind of soup?
It depends on my mood to the truth, you know, but you know, I love the clam chowders, you know, the chicken and broccoli, you know, the chicken noodle soup, I mean, you know, chilies, I mean, I eat everything, man. I'm really quite fat at heart, even though I work hard to stay lean, but I got a fat at heart, man.
Well, Campbell's soup needs to come to you. I mean, this is such a natural. Get you to be in their ads. I don't know why this hasn't happened already. You reach out to them.
We need to figure out how to make this happen, because I would love to do your Father Campbell's soup.
Let's listen. Hopefully they're listening right now. Hopefully Daryl Campbell, or whatever his name is, the heir to the Campbell's soup empire, is listening right now, and he'll contact you. In the meantime, Calais Campbell, have you been able to – I imagine – as a fan, when my team loses, I can't watch football for the next week or so. Have you been able to tune into these playoffs, or have you been keeping track of what's going on?
Yeah, I actually watch. You know, it's hard for me, but I still watch, you know, because I'm still a fan of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to see what these guys are doing, you know, how I can get better. So I'm studying, you know, what they got that's causing them to win and what we need to get better at. So, you know, I pay attention to every game, man.
Well, what about that? Where do – I mean, 2014, a terrific season for you guys. But, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that when you lose not one but two quarterbacks, that's where the thing went south on you. But where do the Cardinals need to improve overall in 2015?
You know, I really feel like, you know, we're so close, you know. Just, you know, I mean, we can always, you know, build a depth in the offensive defensive line. You know, I think, we could use, a pretty solid, physical running guy, you know, running back or something like that, you know. But really, you know, I think we just need to build depth, you know. We definitely have a lot of guys, a lot of different positions that can be stars, you know. We just got to continue to build our depth, you know. I mean, the good teams, you know, those are the teams that have, you know, three or four guys at one position that are competing to play, you know. And, you know, when you're competing to play, you're just going to bring the best football out of you.
How much do you anticipate you guys will miss Todd Bowles? Because it was remarkable with the pieces that you lost there, with all due respect to you. Obviously, you know, some big guys went down before the season and during the season. What was it about the scheme that let you guys just keep on ticking like you did? I mean, you guys really were one of the best defenses again.
You know, Coach Bowles will be definitely missed. You know, he's a great coach. You know, he's a you know, practically a genius, you know, when it comes to this football stuff, he really is a genius, you know, so it's going to be hard, you know, but I know we're going to get another good coach eventually, you know, and B.A. is such a good judge of character and talent, you know, so I know he's going to bring in somebody who we can, you know, somebody we can believe in that's going to get the job done for us, but, you know, I mean, whoever comes in, they're inheriting, you know, a very talented defense, you know, and you know, guys who are very hungry, you know, and want to play hard and win a lot of games in their future. So whoever it is, the job should be a little easier, you know.
Let's talk about the division champs, your arch rival, the Seattle Seahawks, and we'll start with this. Who's harder to tackle, Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch? Two very different kind of guys to try and track down. Who's scarier? It's fourth and goal with the Super Bowl on the line. Russell Wilson is in space or Marshawn Lynch. Calais Campbell has to track him down. I guess that would be the NFC title game, not the Super Bowl. But either way, who is more of a nightmare?
You know, personally, I've had more bad tougher time in my career tackling Russell Wilson. Hmm. I don't know why, but he's so elusive, you know, and he's hard to bring down. You know, even Marshawn is a beast, though, and he's tough to tackle, too. But
yeah, Marshawn Lynch, yeah. I've seen him in person, and he is massive, certainly the biggest running back I've ever seen. He looks more like a tight end or a D-tackle.
Yeah, he has deceptive quickness, too. I mean, for as big as he is, he's got a lot of speed, man. People don't realize how fast he is, you know, and he's smart, too. He's such a smart football player. I mean, he knows how to, you know, when to keep his feet moving and finish his leverage. You know, all the stuff that, you know, you wish running backs would never know. I mean, that's a typical player's playbook. But, yeah, I mean, he's a real smart man. So you got to give take your hat off to him, man. He's a great player, man, a great competitor. And, you know, a guy that, you know, I've always enjoyed going against the last couple of years.
Well, listen, but, if you enjoy him so much, why don't you do this? He's coming to Arizona, as you know, next week. After the game, just don't let him leave. He's a free agent. Make him play for the Cardinals in 2015. How about that?
Yeah, that would be intriguing. That would be interesting. You know, hey, you know, the front office, somebody needs to, you know, go talk to those guys and see what they think, you know. But, you know, he definitely, I don't know, as a person, but as a football player, you know, I respect him a lot. You know, he's so talented and so good. But tell you the truth, though, you know, Russell Wilson, he's young and up and coming. And, you know, I hate playing against him, but every time, you know, he's always a tough tackle. But, you know, I mean, that guy, he's special, too. You know, it's what he can do with his feet and how smart he is, man.
Yeah, it's
your team a lot.
You know, it really is amazing. You know, credit to Russell Wilson for having just a horrible 55 minutes and bouncing back. Not a lot of guys, when things are going against them like that, can rise to the occasion in the clutch there. Speaking of that, Russell Wilson or Andrew Luck? You've played against both of them. You're starting a franchise. Which guy would you rather have?
Oh, man, that's so tough because I see the potential in Andrew Luck. I see the potential in Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. And even though he's still working to get there, you know, you can't go against Andrew Luck. And I feel like when it's all said and done, he might be, you know, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. You know, he's only in his third year, but they're both in their third year. They both came out the same year, right? But I think Russell Wilson inherited a better team, you know, a more ready team. And I think you put Andrew Luck on the Seahawks, man, that makes him even that much harder to beat.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. That's the fun thing to do, is to trade them to each other's team and then figure out what the result would be. What is, as you see it, like I say, you see them twice a year, and in fact, you went up to the clink and did the near impossible and beat them a year ago. What is the Seahawks' weakness?
You know, to tell you the truth, you have to stop the run. You know, they didn't throw them off, you know. And Green Bay did that for most of the game, and that's why Green Bay was successful. But once Marshawn Lynch got going and they started doing the zone read and the quarterback kept it a couple times, you can tell, I mean, they just got the confidence back just like that, you know. But if you just shut down the run and make them have to throw the ball deep to beat you, you know, that's not really what Russell Wilson wants to do. Russell Wilson's a great play-action quarterback, you know, but as a quarterback, you know, come back in the pocket, you know, keeping them in there. You know, he still can beat you. He's still dangerous, but you give yourself the best opportunity. But you definitely got to stop Marshawn Lynch. You can't let Marshawn Lynch beat you.
On the other side of things, the Seahawks defense is obviously a good one, and Michael Bennett says it's the best of the Super Bowl era. I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit too far. Do you consider them the best defense in the NFL, or do you think that that you guys maybe have something to say about that when you have your pieces?
We definitely have something to say about that. They do what they do well, and and you got to respect them. You know, they have a lot of pieces in place, and they do what they do well. You know, but I think that when we're playing our best ball, you know, I think we're a tough team to beat, too, and I think our defense, I mean, when we play, both play good defense, you know, I think it's quite the match, you know. But right now they're playing good football. You know, you really can't take that from them. You know, if we want to be the best, we have to beat the best. And, you know, right now they're the best team. So.
Well, you want them, like, you know, we talk about Miami, and of course, you know, in college, when your conference does well, there's a certain amount of pride you take from that. But do you feel like, I hope the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, or I don't care who they're playing, I just want to see them suffer and lose this game?
You know, I get what you're saying. You know, I cheer for Florida State when they're playing the out of conference team because I want the ACC to look good because Miami's an ACC. But when we get to the NFL, it's different, you know. I mean, it's different. You know, I did go for Seattle last year. You know, I wanted to see them win last year because our conference hasn't won one, you know, in a long time. But our division hasn't won one in a long time. But now that they, you know, have had one, you know, I'm a Patriots angle. I don't want to see Seattle celebrating in my city, man. It's too hard to imagine Seattle celebrating my city. So I'm becoming a Patriots fan just for a week, man. Just for one day, really.
But, I hear you. Enough's enough. Even if you want to see your division foe win one, it's like, all right, two is now it's getting to be too much already here. I hear you on that one. Yeah, you can't root for them. Yeah, such a bummer for, I'm sure, the Cardinals and for the city because it really did, you know, as recently as 6-7 weeks ago, you thought, hey, this team has a real shot at being the first home team in a Super Bowl there, but the pieces like we talk about are still there and looking bright for you. So we wish you the best going forward. Enjoy the Pro Bowl next week or this Sunday, I guess I should say, and then hopefully we'll cross paths in Arizona at some point. And I got to tell you, Calais, because I've told Darnell Dockett this, Patrick Peterson this. You guys are, I think, of all the units in the NFL. I think the defensive group in Arizona has the most fun guys on it. True?
Oh, yeah.
Most delightful group of fellas.
Well, thank you. We really do appreciate it, man. We love playing with each other, man. It really is quite entertaining in the locker room.
Well, and I'm sure it starts with Bruce Arians because he seems like a fun guy as well. But like I say, we'll let you go. Go get ready for that Pro Bowl. Are you going to try to tackle? You're going to do stuff there? You're going to try to wrap up the guys?
I'm going to go out there and have fun, man.
Okay, good.
I love the game of football, man. I'm going to go out there and play. It's the only way I know how.
All right, go get him. Calais Campbell, good luck. I hope, like I say, I hope the soup air gets in touch with you so we can make that. Just remember your friend Dave if that ever happens. If the Campbell soup.
I will.
Okay,
I'll
cool. All right, good. All right, take care, man. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
All right, man. Take it easy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to Dave Damashek.
All right, that's that. Thanks to Calais Campbell. We'll see him next week. Hopefully we'll see some of you next week walking around Phoenix, Arizona, Glendale, Arizona. You know what I recommend you do, by the way? If you do see us, Handsome Hank loves nothing more than to be hugged. So go up there and just give him a big hug. Black Tie likes a spank on the bum. That's what he likes, just, too.
But so you have to say good job at the same time.
That's right, yeah. So go
good
ahead.
Good job,
and do
Black Tie.
Oh, yeah, it's a basketball playing thing. Yeah, you go around checking, you know. Hey,
yeah,
good job.
Right.
Good game,
so,
good game, guys.
Hugs for Handsome. Slaps on the tuchus for Black Tie.
And
no
Dave,
eye contact
don't
with
high
me.
Five, Dave. Whatever you do, don't high five. He only likes the high 10.
He also loves the he loves the jumping chest bumps, too.
Yeah. All about. Dave is all about those.
As long as you don't make eye contact with me. That's why I'm unnerved by that sort of thing. So, all right. Drew Staton, you'll be out there as well?
Yeah, feel free to bring me bourbon.
Oh, okay. So everybody's got something. And,
everyone's
and,
got a thing.
And, of course, Smelliot could use some body spray. Yeah, something like that. Just
I
to
just
cover
like
up
people that don't shower. So please hug Hank if you haven't showered.
All right. We will have a positively gay time, I am sure of it, next week in Arizona. Hope you'll be following along. Like I say, NFL.com. The NFL live show is 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. East. Is that right? Black Tie, I think. No, that would be Pacific.
Local. 10 to 1.
Mountain. So that would be 1 to 4 East.
Because we're in Mountain Time in Phoenix.
Oh,
I discovered
time
it.
Zones.
Yeah. I thought Phoenix was Pacific. It's not.
No, it's
very
not.
Confusing.
Fun fact. No.
So just put on NFL.com and leave it
hope.
On, and then it'll
just
be there.
Hope.
But I do know we have a gangbusters list of guests that'll be visiting with me and Money and Rank and Molly Karam. So be on the lookout for that. All right, enough's enough. We bid good day to Studio 66 on the Glendale, Arizona. In the meantime, thanks so much for it. It's been fun. been a thin slice of heaven.